Well, the single most divisive political issue of the past decade, climate change, is again front and centre of this election campaign. With just 2 weeks to go until polling day, or just over 2 weeks to go until polling day, the government has pounced on a new analysis which puts the economic cost of Labor's 45% emissions reduction plan at more than $540 billion by 2030. The Energy Minister, Angus Taylor, told us earlier that its modelling Labor is refusing to do itself.
We have an election in 2.5 weeks' time. If Labor is putting forward what is a very aggressive policy, which will have economic impacts, and they haven't explained both the details and the impacts of those policies, then they are being irresponsible. Brian Fisher's modelling shows this. He says, whichever way you look at it, the impacts will be large.
That's Angus Taylor, the Energy Minister, speaking to us before 8. If you missed that interview, it's there on our website. Well, Mark Butler is the Shadow Minister for Climate Change and Energy. Mark Butler, good morning.
Good morning, Fran, and congratulations on getting Angus Taylor out. I think it's more than 2 weeks since he's made a media appearance, and he continues to refuse a climate change policy debate during this campaign.
Oh, well, he was raring to go against your policy today, looking at the modelling by Brian Fisher, which has come up with a $542 billion hit to the wider economy, up to an 11% cut to wages growth, 50% higher electricity prices and job losses ranging up to 330,000, which is a pretty disastrous scenario. Has Brian Fisher spelled out the true cost of your climate change action plan?
Well, of course he hasn't, and this is no more credible than the last piece of rubbish that he published a week or two ago with the same utterly dodgy assumptions. I mean, he assumes, for example, that it costs $300 per tonne to abate carbon. Now, we're getting carbon abated for about $12 to $15 a tonne under the government's policy, so he's out by about 2,000% there. He assumes that energy storage costs $200 per megawatt hour. You may remember the last time you interviewed Angus Taylor, you asked him about this, and he said that that was a figure from ARENA, the Renewable Energy Agency. They then testified before the Senate, though, that they had no idea where Brian Fisher had come up with this policy or this figure, and it certainly wasn't from them, because the industry is getting storage away for about a quarter of that price. He's also assumed that electricity is covered by this policy. It's quite clear that electricity is not covered by the safeguards mechanism. Electricity has been modelled to death, particularly through the National Energy Guarantee. And the only way you see electricity prices going up is if you build a fleet of new coal-fired power stations, which is Angus Taylor's policy. So this is utterly rubbish, and utterly at odds with every other piece of analysis of this policy. For example, Citibank's analysis last week that said that even for the 250 companies covered by our policy, so 0.01% of Australian businesses, the impact would be, to use their words, immaterial and manageable.
Okay, so you can give us chapter and verse on why Brian Fisher's modelling is wrong and what it's getting wrong, but you can't give us any sense of what your policy will cost. You heard the minister there. If Labor's putting forward an aggressive climate change target, it's irresponsible to not be able to tell voters during an election what it's likely to cost the economy, because, as you rightly acknowledge, there is a cost to taking climate action.
Well, I've just talked about Citibank's analysis, a bank that's
what's
very
your analysis?
Well known for this analysis. I've also talked about the analysis by Warwick McKibben, which I remember you saying to me some time ago was 2015 analysis. Well, Warwick McKibben, over the last two weeks, has reaffirmed the conclusions he made back in 2015, which is that this would have a small fraction of an impact on the economy, and there would be no macroeconomic difference between the Liberal and the Labor policies because of our approach to international trading. And the only qualification Warwick McKibben made in the last fortnight to his earlier assumptions is that the cost of emissions reduction has probably come down, in his view, because of technology.
Okay, so is it just a matter of choose the modelling you want? Is that what the voters need to try and work their way through?
The vast bulk of modelling, which is on one side, that aligns with Warwick McKibben's modelling, which was commissioned by the Abbott government, Citibank and such like, or you can choose one piece of outlier modelling, Brian Fisher's, which is by a fellow who has never met a climate policy in 20 years that he didn't oppose. I mean, this is the fellow that Tony Abbott phoned when he wanted to demolish the renewable energy target. This guy has form on this stuff.
All right. Brian Fisher has modelled a number of scenarios this time, which is different to the one he did a few months ago, relating to foreign permits, which is part of your policy. Essentially, the more offsets you allow, foreign offsets, the smaller the impact on economic growth. If you allowed unlimited access to international credits under his modelling, the cost would be $264 billion cumulatively by 2030. You might dispute those
just
numbers,
rubbish,
but
it is just rubbish.
Okay, If you say the numbers are rubbish, do you accept the principle is sound? If so, where would you plan? Do you have a sense of where you would set that cap in terms of how many international credits, what proportion companies could claim?
Well, it really depends on what the price of international credits are vis-a-vis the price of domestic credits.
So it wouldn't be capped?
Well, there would probably be some cap down the track, but the business community with which I've engaged exhaustively over the last 12 to 18 months has asked us for a number of policy details. For example, to allow international trading, we've ticked that, the government hasn't. To allow more liquidity in the domestic market by, for example, allowing offsets from the electricity industry, we've allowed that, the government hasn't. To introduce more liquidity into the carbon farming sector, we've done that with very significant research money, which Abbott cut back in 2014. So every single question or every single request the business community has asked of Labor, we have agreed to. But some of these details, for example, the way in which the international market is going to operate, are not going to be entirely clear until the Paris Agreement market is finally determined. And that is going to take a little while. Every business organisation in Australia will tell you that.
But you must have some parameters. I mean, will Labor be insisting, for instance, that the businesses that are part of the Safeguard Mechanism scheme must buy Australian offsets first if they're available?
Well, probably what would happen, I think every business organisation accepts this, is that there would be a limit to international trading, as there was under the carbon price mechanism in the last Labor government, to ensure that there is a balance between domestic abatement and the ability to access international permits. But once you do allow access to international permits, it has an impact on the price. It has an impact on the price of abatement in the domestic economy, and that is what the business organisations want. But at the end of the day, these issues, the impact on 250 businesses, Fran, are not what the Australian community is talking to me about. They want to know about what the impact on them, 10 million households, around energy prices is going to be. And they know that expanding renewable energy with a 50% renewable energy target is going to bring down power prices. They want to know how their cars are going to be made more fuel efficient so that they save more than $500 per year at the Bowser, because they'll be driving more efficient cars on the way to an electric vehicle revolution. These are the things that people are talking to me about, not Brian Fisher's modelling about the impact on 0.01% of Australian businesses.
Would you have been happy for Treasury to have been asked to do this modelling exercise independently, cost the climate policies of both major parties? Should the voters have had that to go into this election campaign with?
Well, I mean, I think the thing about the safeguards mechanism, whether it's the one operated, the way in which Scott Morrison operates it, or the one that Labor would if we're elected in May, is that ultimately business has asked both sides of government to have a model that allows them to make the decisions, not to have a price imposed by Canberra. And it's very difficult, ultimately, to know how each different one of the 250 businesses is going to respond to this. Some will make changes to their operations, which involve an investment which will create a benefit, for example. I mean, there is a cost to putting solar panels on your roof if you're a householder, but there's also a benefit that pays back that cost over a period of time and then provides ongoing benefits. I know Brian Fisher's not made any attempt to try and cost the benefits of emissions reduction. So ultimately, it's very difficult to model something that ultimately depends on the decision-making processes of individual businesses. And that's the point.
Yes, but they're still going to be operating within your parameters. I mean, you've got a policy, you've got parameters. It will be a de facto price on carbon ultimately. And you must, surely there's some way we can work out where that's likely to fall.
Well, I think the problem with that is that there are assumptions that seek to look into the mind of individual businesses. And I make that point about Brian Fisher's modelling of the Liberal Party policy as well. I don't know whether Angus Taylor accepted Brian Fisher's conclusion that the Liberal Party policy would create a $92 carbon price and a $90 billion hit to GDP. I don't know whether he accepts that, because surely he accepts that if he accepts Fisher's modelling of Labor's policy. Now, I don't accept that modelling of the Liberal Party policy, because I think the assumptions that underlie that are rubbish as well. So, you can't have it, but you have to have it both ways.
It's 16 past eight. Our guest is Mark Butler, Shadow Minister for Climate Change and Energy. Labor's going to announce today a $75 million renewables training package, which you claim will help create 70,000 new jobs in the sector. If renewables is such a booming sector, and we know it is, why the need still for government subsidy, government leg up?
Well, because what we've seen across the economy, not just in energy, is 150,000 fewer apprenticeships in Australia than when Tony Abbott was elected. There was a need across the board to reinvigorate the apprenticeship system, reinvigorate the TAFE system. And across the economy, that is Labor's plan with a $200 million plan to reinvigorate TAFE campuses, for example. But in the renewable energy sector, particularly today, Bill and Doug Cameron and I are announcing that there would be $45 million targeted at 10,000 new apprenticeships in the renewable energy industry, as well as $30 million to upgrade TAFE to ensure that industry gets the new workers that they're going to need as this revolution takes hold through the economy.
Mark Butler, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Wayne.
Mark Butler is the Shadow Minister for Climate Change and Energy. It's 17 past 8.